Well, another day, another 50 cents. It's the podcast for a Monday. Big deal. McCallan here and Shannon over there. That's it? You stick your thumb out? That's all you can do?
No, okay. Well, you gave me such trouble last week for asking for more credit for the show, but I've given up.
Well, I gave you a crap load of credit last week on the show. What more do you want?
More credit, of course.
As I say previous, I've said previously, and will continue to say,
get your own. That's right.
Solve that problem in a hurry. Look what the cat dragged in. From MLB Network and DAZN and various other places, here's our pal Adnan Virk. You look beautiful. How are you?
I'm doing great, Bob. Great to see you, too. You look beautiful as well. How about our man, John Shannon? So yesterday, Jackie Redmond of the NHL Network, fellow Canadian, texted me. He goes, John Shannon wants your number. I want to make sure that's okay. I said, yes, it's okay, but thanks for checking, because there are many a time I might say, no, don't get my number.
I get that all the time. So
yeah. I then followed up, Bob. I said, by the way, Jackie, tell John I'd like to hear from him, but don't call me. I don't like answering the phone. If he wants to text me, I'll answer 30 texts in a row. Seinfeld has a bit about this. Why does anybody call anybody on the phone anymore? Just text me. I'll respond to every text. If you call me, I'm probably not going to return the phone call.
Well, how old are you? No, seriously, how old are you?
I'm 42.
I have the same problem with my 26-year-old. You know, she'll say, well, I texted him. He didn't get back to me. Pick up the phone. Talk.
I got both of you killed here. I have an 18-year-old who texts me from the bedroom to the family room. What's hey, for dinner? Can you take me to the store?
Oh.
Blah, 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 blah. She is literally 50 feet away from me. Gets those thumbs going on the phone.
Oh.
Drives me up the wall.
But you text back, don't you, Bob? Go, no problem, sweetie. I'll meet you outside.
Well, I have no choice. You know?
Well, at least she didn't send you a...
She
could have sent you a fax, Bob. She could have sent you a fax.
She's like Virk. She won't answer the bleeping phone. If I want to communicate with her, I've got to do it on her terms. So some of this is being young, and some of it is being a woman.
No. By the way, that was Robert McCowan saying that, because yes. I have nothing to do with that. In this day and age,
well, for the handful of women that are watching or listening to this, they understand, you know, if they dig down deep, if they look in the rear view mirror at themselves, which they're doing all the time anyway while they drive, you know, they check the hair, make sure everything's okay.
That is Robert McCowan. That is not Adnan Virk or John Shannon, just to be clear.
What a couple of wimps.
So politically correct, Bob.
We're going to go down a whole bunch of roads here with Mr. Virk, but I want to start with baseball. And here's what I want to say. We've got like a week left in this regular season, correct?
Yeah.
I have no bleeping idea who's any good. I have no idea who's worthy of being in the postseason. Yeah. I don't know who the best team is. I don't know who the favorite should be. I mean, I guess it's the Dodgers. The Dodgers have the best record.
San Diego's pretty good.
San Diego's pretty good in the same division. The White Sox have somehow managed to put together a decent season. And I know we've been saying for a few years now, Virk, that this has been coming with the White Sox because they had, you know, they had some young talent.
Yeah.
But it's a little shocking to see it happen. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's funny, Bob. I had a friend of mine say to me recently, you know what? I've enjoyed the fact baseball's back. I'm happy you all have jobs. I'm happy everyone's working. But this to me has been like a really fun exhibition season because it's tough for me to say, wow, to your point, the Rays and White Sox and A's really are the best teams in baseball because over 162, that might be true. It might not be true. Generally, the longer the season, you will get a sense of who the pretenders and the contenders are. But at face value, you say, to your point, the White Sox, well, they're expected to be good. Like you said, Luis Robert, potential rookie of the year. Jose Abreu, who's been a great run producer for a while. They signed Dallas Keuchel. Giolito's a great pitcher. Sixth in Cy Young voting, and so on. So it was expected they'd be good. Again, the Padres were building something special with a young core. Tatis has been incredible. Machado, great year, and so on. But I think the best way to look at it is this. It's a crapshoot. It always is, I suppose, in the playoffs, but especially this year. And to your point, the National League, I feel like it's Dodgers. John's right to mention the Padres. And then basically everybody else. If I tell you about the Cubs, I'd say, well, the Cubs, they've been inconsistent. Baez and Bryant or Rizzo, their best players, haven't been great except the last 2 weeks. The Braves starting pitching has been ramshackle at best. Ian Anderson's a future star, but of course he missed Soroka. Hamels is now back. Who knows how much more he has? The point is this. I hate any playoff system. And I get the fact for baseball they did it this year because 60-game season, hey, why the hell not, right? Run on second and extra innings, seven-inning doubleheaders, 16 teams make the playoffs. But generally, Bob, I have a real issue when more than half the teams make the playoffs because you're diluting the regular season. You see it in hockey, you see it in basketball, and this year in baseball, you're going to have one or two teams that are 500 or worse. What is the point? And nothing is worse, Bob, than if that team, let's suppose the Giants make the playoffs, the Giants beat the Dodgers in a three-game series, which anybody conceivably can win two out of three games. Of course you can. And then all of a sudden the Giants, your eight-seed sub-500, make a run of the World Series. That would leave a sour taste in my mouth.
Doesn't bother me at all. I'll tell you, I take the opposite viewpoint. I've said it many times on the show. I won't go into all the specifics. But from an economic perspective, I can make the argument that the more teams that are in the postseason, the better off you are economically. And even if you have to reduce it to 154-game schedule, the number of meaningful games being played in the month of September in the various cities increases dramatically, and I'm all in favor of that. But we won't get into that argument, besides Shannon is chomping at the bit to say something.
No, because it's I'm still trying to figure out the format anyway. I mean, I had to look again
one
today.
One plays eight. It's not nuclear science. No,
but,
you don't.
So the Jays really are in because the closest team to them in the American League is Seattle, and Seattle's like 9 million games behind them. The Jays can have this awful September collapse. Well, at least it's at the right time of year, but still make the playoffs. So it's really not as bad as everybody is panicking here in Toronto.
Well, they're not. Well, Virk, I mean, I don't know how much you've watched this Blue Jay team. I'm completely puzzled by them. Bob Elliott was on with us last week, and I said the same thing to him. I got no idea. I said, who's your star? Who's the rotation? You're getting ready for the postseason. I mean, at least you should know who your one, two, and three starting pitchers are.
Mm-hmm.
I got no idea. Ryu, and then
right.
One of those other guys.
Right. Ryu, you know, in theory, Dave Dombrowski, the former GM of the Rockies, was telling me, he goes, the guy who is the most talented is Robbie Ray. I said, when they got Robbie Ray, he's an ERA north of 7. He's like, I'm aware of that. He's walked too many guys. But if you're going strictly by quality of talent, prior to the start of the season, if you look at that rotation, you go, Robbie Ray is definitely your number 2. Ryu is 1. Taiwan Walker might be a 3. And I go, what about Tanner Roark? They go, no. Chase Anderson? Nope, definitely not. Nate
Shoemaker, Shoemaker, right. If he comes back.
Right.
Now, he doesn't have the history, long-term history, as good as any of those other guys, but he's pitched really well since he's been here. Albeit, what has he pitched, 6 games, John?
Not that many, that's for sure.
In a year, essentially 2 years?
2 years.
Anyway, yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you, Adnan.
That's okay. So I would think if you trot out those three, if you go Ryu, Ray, and Walker. By the way, Ray isn't a great number 2. He has talent, but he might only go 4 innings, and also you go back to that bullpen. The good news for the Jays is they have an excellent bullpen, which we all know. Romano, Bass, even without Giles, they've done a very good job. So I think, Bob, listen, they've been incredibly streaky, so I don't fault you for being confounded by them because I think everybody would be befuddled to some level. Whenever one guy has struggled, another guy has stepped up. So if Vladdy was struggling, okay, Lourdes Gurriel was doing fine. Teoscar Hernandez had a great season. He was injured. Grichuk is a guy who I find maddening, but he's streaky. When he's hot, he's great. When he's not, he's not. So I think for the Jays, it's weird that you look at them, and as we were saying, as a number 8 seed, as John points out, because Seattle, Baltimore, Detroit, those teams are all terrible. They're not going to catch the Blue Jays. So if you say Jays, White Sox, again, 3-game series, you're on the road, but who cares? So you're playing in Chicago for 3 games.
You're on the road for every game.
Right. So if you haven't been at home all year, but it's Salem Field all year. So if you win 2 to 3 games against Chicago or Tampa, that could happen. But could the Jays also lose those 2 games and go home? That could theoretically happen as well. It's nice to make the playoffs, but it feels different, obviously, when 16 make it. And obviously, it's a 60-game season.
I should know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So the first series is best of 3. So it's 1-8-2-7-3-6-4-5, right?
You got it, yep.
And then it's a best of 3 series. All 3 games at the higher seed?
Correct. Which is interesting for the Yankees and Twins, because that could be the 4-5, and those are the 2 teams with the best records in the American League. So that's one example where you could say, okay, that would be important for the Yankees to be at home or Minnesota to be at home. But again, as you know, Bob and John, if you look at baseball postseason the last 10 years, home field is virtually negligible. The only sport where it really matters is basketball. Baseball playoffs isn't as important as it used to be.
Big picture stuff, Adnan, based on the way that the season started for Major League Baseball, did you think we'd get to this point and start talking about playoffs?
John, the amount of consternation and panic and fear for all of us, I was so worried. And I kept telling people before the season started, I said, okay, I think we got a chance. But if we wake up on Labor Day and 12 Dodgers test positive, that'll be it. And sure enough, we're 9 days into it. They couldn't even get through the first weekend. And we go, wait, Marlins outbreak. And you go, oh, my God. And I was petrified was going to happen. Selfishly, I make my living with this. All of us are not going to get paid. We have a lot of people employed with this. So I was very, very worried. Then Rob Manfred came out and said, listen, it's concerning, obviously, but we're going to get through this. We have strict protocol. We'll figure it out. Then that first week, I was at Yankee Stadium. How about this, by the way? Last year, I didn't go to one baseball game. This year, I've been to four baseball games. MLB Network has sent me to two Yankee games, one Mets game, one Nationals game. I'm at Yankee Stadium. I'm seeing the reports saying the Cardinals have an outbreak. Some networks are being told, start planning for other programming. Baseball could shut down. I said, oh, my God, 8 days in. Never have we missed baseball more than this. And then again, Rob Manfred came out very defiantly, said, I'm not a quitter. We're going to push through this. So at that point, John, I felt like, okay, if the commissioner, who's clearly working for the owners, and they're saying, we're getting this done hell or high water, I felt more optimistic we were going to get done. But the feeling of fear, I don't think really subsided until Labor Day. I think all of July and August, I was like every day checking the headlines. All right, who tested positive now? Oh, Mets. Okay, who's this now? All right, A's. Oh, they're banged the game. But once we got through to September, I felt like, okay, we're going to get this done. But to your point, if you'd asked me in July 25th, are we actually going to get through the season? I would have said less than 50% chance. So I'm thrilled.
So what changed? Did the players start to buy in? Did they actually have to look after themselves?
Yeah, my understanding is the players just did a much better job. Like in the past, it was, hey, listen, I live in Georgia. In Atlanta, I can go out for dinner with my family. Oh, we can hit a club out here. Like, what's the big deal? Oh, if I'm in New York, I can't, but that's fine. And they realized, no, new rules now. You go to the park, you play the game, you go home, period. We cannot take this risk. And a good example of that was in Cleveland. Zach and Clevenger go out to the bar, meet a couple girls, have a good time. And afterwards, they confront Zach Plesac. Where were you? Nowhere. No, where were you? No, seriously, we knew you weren't here. No. Oh, really? We have you here on the security camera. Who's that? That's Zach with a girl. You're lying to us. Okay, fine. You guys got me. You're going home. That's it. They voted by a team. He's a great pitcher, John. They go, get out of here. We don't want you here. We're all following protocol. We can't have Terry Francona get sick. We've got older coaches, et cetera. And Clevenger, you can leave too. You're with him. And he gets shipped to the Padres. I think that was a real example. The players going, hey, we're policing ourselves. We're not taking this risk. Everything's on the line here. Not only health, but financial security. So get in line or get out.
One of the intriguing things here is that with starting with this extra round of postseason now and starting with a three-game series, we are likely to see the three best starting pitchers on each team one extra time, at least. And I'm wondering if you've thought about how managers coordinate all this. Clearly, in the case of the Blue Jays, they may, I don't think so, but they may have to go down to the last weekend, and those games may become important. So you can't pitch Claude Thamalfichuk on Saturday and Sunday unless you're already in, in which case you will see some guy, like they take somebody out of the stands, except they're all made out of cardboard. So they can't pitch. They may call me for all I know. So
McCowan, a notoriously filthy splitter. Go ahead, Bob.
Nasty forkball. They don't even. Nobody else throws a forkball anymore. Bob, they changed the name of it.
Bob. Overhand, though. You have to throw overhand.
Got to. Is it like a rule? I don't think it's a rule.
We're making it a rule today.
I think it's a suggestion.
We're making it a rule.
However. Anyway.
It's like shooting free throws in basketball. You can go underhand if you want to.
God, the crap I got to put up with on this show. So how do you change your rotation? What do you do? How are you as a manager operating this? In the best case scenario, you're playing a 2 out of 3 series. You want to win the first two games, and you want the team you're going to play next to play the third game, and then you probably have one off day. So you can probably keep your top three in line for some period of time. But is there any other trick to this?
I almost think, like, Bob, your number two might be your number three. So you just go ahead and get your ace of there. Obviously, you have to win that game. And then you use that other guy, not an opener, but a starter, maybe.
Use your three-second?
Yeah, use your three-second.
Good idea.
Yeah. Right? Try to get that win. If you don't get that, hey, no problem. Then I'll go the number two guy. Because if not, if we can win it in two, great. My number two guy can start the division series.
Right.
He's going in game one and game five. So I think that's the key. I think if I'm a team with two really good starting pitchers, then I feel good about myself. And I would go number one guy, then the three, then the two. Because you're right. There is going to be no letup. They played 60 games in 66 days in the regular season. This playoffs, there's no break. Three games, right to the division series, right to the championship series. Let's go. So bullpens are important, and your starters are going to be critical.
Yeah, particularly now that they're going to be in a bubble.
Right.
So where there's no travel to worry about. Everybody's going to go back at it tomorrow. The interesting thing now is if we ever get back to a 162 or, as Bob wants, a 154, you have to wonder, does a two out of three replace the wild card game?
I think so. I mean, it's interesting. I remember when the wild card first came. You guys remember, too, a lot of purists were annoyed about traditionals, et cetera. The annoyance I found was the wild card ended up beating the one seed and then going all the way to the World Series. You'd say, well, what's the point of winning the division? Because we're all equal. So they figured that out and go, okay, hang on a second. Let's add a second wild card, so let's reward somebody for actually winning the division. Now you get two people going, man, one game, are you kidding? If my starter has one bad game or my ace gets hurt in the final week of the season, all of a sudden nine innings, that's what 162 comes down to?
Right.
Okay, fine. We'll do it a two out of three. So I actually think the two out of three does have a better chance of staying because people just think like, oh, my God. Yes, there's a March Madness feel to it, John, but that feels really unfair to put it down to one game. Give us a better three.
Every other part of baseball is time-driven. Even though there's no clock, it's driven by how many games you play And it doesn't deal with short trends. It deals with long-term trends. And that's why I like baseball. I mean, and so I always thought the wild card was silly when you consider you worked that your tail off for 162 games, and then it's one game and you're out? Come on.
Bob misses the days of the NHL, 21 teams, 16 teams make it. Isn't that right, Bob?
I miss a lot of things, but good health.
By the way, in that 16 team playoff thing in 21, they did have a best two out of three.
Well, but hang on a second. You guys are all waxing eloquent. The truth of the matter is that at least Shannon and I are old enough to remember when there were 10 teams in each league. And you know how many teams made the playoffs? None. Two teams went directly to the World Series. All this crap about, is just, it's nonsense.
Mind you, Bob remembers when the Major League Baseball moved west of the Mississippi, too, so.
But prior to that,
baseball is played west of the Mississippi? Are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
Holy crap.
I remember when I met Billy Bob Thornton. He said, I'm a huge Cardinals fan. I said, you're from Arkansas. He said, yeah, but the Cardinals, St. Louis is the most westernmost team. I said, wow, we're going back a long ways.
Okay.
Yeah, Billy before Bob the Dodgers Thornton. And the Giants, that was it, right?
That's right. That's right. So, Billy Bob Thornton, you opened the door, Ednan. You opened the door.
Here we go.
So, now let's be practical.
I'll just listen. You guys carry on.
What'd you think of the Emmys last night?
So, how about Schitt's Creek? I mean, Canada. I mean, that's a great moment for Canada to set history. I knew they were going to win, John. I had them on my unofficial ballot, best series, and actor and actress. I said, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara Lux. I did not expect Dan to win for supporting actor. I did not expect whoever the hell won supporting actress. I did not think they'd win writing and directing. I said, oh my, 7 for 7. Think of the greatest shows in the history of the continent, into the universe. I Love Lucy, Cheers, Frasier, Seinfeld, MASH. No one's done what Schitt's Creek did last night. And how about Jimmy Kimmel? He goes, there's only like 20 people in Canada. This means like one in four Canadians tonight won an Emmy. And meantime, we've had the Stanley Cup for 27 years.
Yeah.
I thought he was really funny. The show that I caught up on during the pandemic with my wife is Succession, which is tremendous on HBO. It's a brilliant show. I'm glad that you're nodding affirmatively because I had not seen it. And now that I have it, oh my God, this show's incredible. Modern day King Lear, rich people behaving badly. I'm so glad that show won. And Watchmen, I'm not big into comic book shows, but it's a terrific limited series. It was 9 episodes. Regina King, very prescient about race relations in America. It was really good. So As far as the ceremony, John, not a lot of upsets. Basically, those three won everything. Schitt's Creek, Succession, and Watchmen. But I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a good job, because it was all via Zoom. It was actually moderately entertaining.
Well, they did. By the way, it was closer to time than any other Emmy show in history. It was only 4 minutes over, which was
done at 11:04. Fantastic! I flipped over and watched the Sunday Nighter. It was great.
So I guess Ozark has already jumped the shark a little bit.
1 for 18 it goes last night. I mean,
Ozark is fantastic.
Right, but Mad Men back in 2012 went 0 for 17, which is proof that you can be a great show and just not get recognized. I think Better Call Saul's a great show. They've never won an Emmy. They get nominated every year for Best Dramatic Series. Normally, Odenkirk gets nominated. They don't get one. And Ozark, the show, the only representative that won was Julia Garner, who's excellent at Ruth.
She was great.
She's just feisty and tough-talking. I thought Laura Linney might win for Best Dramatic Actress. I thought she was great on the show. I don't want to ruin it for people, but what happens with her brother, that second-last episode. That scene where she says goodbye to her brother is great. But yeah, Ozark did not get as much love as I thought it would.
So over the years when you've been on with us, we've talked a lot about movies. What the heck's going to happen to the movie world? I mean, we're going to see direct releases to home, I guess. I mean, Apple Plus and everything like that. That's where it's going to go?
It's funny.
Are we talking the end of the movie theater?
I don't think so, but there's no question movie theaters are taking a hit. And they all thought Tenet would be the big white whale coming back. A Christopher Nolan movie for $200 million shot in 6 countries with Denzel's kid and Robert Pattinson and Kenneth Branagh. Here we go. And instead, they opened with a limp release. It was supposed to be July 17th, pushed to July 31st, pushed to August 31st, limited release. Not available in New York or LA. That's 15% of your movie theaters in America. Okay, let's just open it, though. Even with a 50% limited capacity, the movie opened at $20 million. If it was a normal year, John, that would open at $50 million. And then the second week, and even more disconcerting, their gross was down to $9.4 million. So what happened is, every other major movie goes, whoa, if Tenet's opening that bad, we're moving our movie. So Wonder Woman 2 was supposed to come out in October. They're like, you know what? We'll see you in December. Candyman, we'll see you next year. Black Widow, November 6th, Scarlett Johansson, maybe next year. The next big tentpole movie is going to be James Bond opening in Thanksgiving in America, November 20th. So I think right now movie theater owners are very skittish because they said, listen, people just aren't comfortable going. It's limited release anyways. There will always be people like you and me who love going to the movies, but there's no question for at least the next 6 months plus, it's a lot of streaming. And thank God for Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, because they'll give us the content that the movie theaters can't give us.
And I know you love Broadway. What are you doing? Broadway's closed, complete.
So I want to tell you, I love David Mamet. He's my favorite playwright. And American Buffalo is going to get a revival. You and Bob remember American Buffalo came out in 1977 in Chicago. Huge hit play. Was adapted into a movie, Dennis Franz and Dustin Hoffman. So Sam Rockwell and Lawrence Fishburne were supposed to be in it. I had my tickets. One of my best friends from Toronto and my old college roommates, John Nadel, was going to fly down from Toronto. We're going to go see the show April 21st. Had our tickets. Boom. Pandemic. And Broadway shut down. As you said, originally they said until September. Now it's for the year. They're going to try to do American Buffalo, this play, next April. But I never imagined we'd see a world Broadway for a year getting nothing. Although I did see Chuck Schumer, one of the politicians in New York, saying they're going to try to get some funding for Broadway actors. As you know, John, they're known as the theater of the working poor. Like, nobody works in theater to be rich, and now you can't work, period, for a year. So it's devastating.
Well, they've opened up.
The interesting thing is that the 5 years that I spent.
Are you on some delay there, John? John may be in a delayed situation. He doesn't seem to be.
I was just saying that the 5 years that I spent in New York were absolutely phenomenal, based on the fact that I could walk down the street and go to a play. I mean, that's what was great about it. I could walk and go to a play, and it's just so much of the pulse of New York City.
Well, production of movies has resumed. I know I had a film company wanted to rent my house out to Bradley Cooper is in Toronto apparently shooting a movie, and so, you know, they were going to pitch my place to Bradley Cooper. And I can't even remember who the other,
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart was the other one. So I know they're shooting again. But release dates, who knows? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, years ago, I was going to say years ago, there was an effort on the part of the industry to move us all into pay-per-view. Everything was going to be pay-per-view. Stanley Cup Finals, Major League Baseball, the World Series, all these things were going to be pay-per-view. Movies were going pay-per-view, blah, 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 blah. Pay-per-view, you know, where is that industry today? And could we see a revival of that for the theater industry?
But isn't that Netflix? I mean, let's face it, isn't
not really
Netflix,
no, because
or, no, but I
you
pay
$8-$10 a month for Netflix and you get a crap load of stuff. I'm talking about, you know, per event pay-per-view, like a major fight. Now, not $50 to watch a movie.
Yeah.
But would you pay, Virk, you're a movie geek, would you pay $5 or $6 to see a new release movie?
They're going
to
charge you $19. Absolutely. They're going to charge you $19 because you're going to have four people to watch the movie. So it's only going to charge each $5.
To John's point, Mulan on Disney Plus, Bob, they said $30 to see that. I said, I'm not paying $30. But their thought is, well, you, your wife, two kids, $7.50 a person. If you went to the movies, fine. But John, I would pay $20. And Bob, if it's a new release, yeah, I would imagine I'm in the theater, $10 to $15. If it's something I'm really geeked up to see, I would probably do it.
So are we going to see a revival of that? Because this thing could go on for years. You know,
I think we're going to see first releases for $19.99. I really do. I think it's a fact of life. I think we're going to see them. You talked about the Bond movie in November. I think we're going to see it on Apple, and we're going to be able to Apple TV, and we're going to be able to purchase it for $19.99.
Right. That may be the way for the indefinite future. Because like Bob said, you know, you've got these movies that's already been shot, which are trying to get released, but then there's going to be this backlog of movies that just weren't shot at all. There's 6 months of no production.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden you're trying to speed this thing up, and you go, okay, 6 feet distance. How do we do a car chase? But this guy can't get too close to this guy. We got to make this safe. And it's like the amount of hoops that they're going through right now. The Batman, they started shooting 1 week in. Robert Pattinson, the star, has COVID. We got to shut this thing down again. It's crazy. Bob, you should have taken up Bradley Cooper on the offer, but said, listen, I get to be in the movie and I get a speaking part.
No. Oh, I don't want to be in a movie. I got asked to be in a movie years ago. There was a movie called
Splash.
No, that's that joint down on Lakeshore, Palais Royale.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There was a crappy movie called Palais Royale.
Okay.
And my significant other at the time was an actress, a wannabe, and I took her to the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And we're standing in line. It's a cattle call. It's like 400 women there, and me, and I'm the boyfriend, right? And I'm just standing there, and the director walks by, and he sees me, and he stops, and he says, Bob McCowan. And he says, I'm a big fan. I said, oh, great. And I have no idea who this guy is. And he says, what are you doing in the line? And I said, well, my significant other here is auditioning. He said, come on with me. So drags us to the front of the – past everybody to the front of the line, and boom, in. And there's the three or four directors, producers, whoever – sitting behind the desk, and they said, and this director introduces me, says, you know, TV guy, blah, 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 blah. He's going to be in the movie. I said, well, why? I'm not going to be in the movie. I'm not an actor. He says, yeah, you can be in the movie. He says, the only thing is it's a 1920s era, and you got to shave. And, of course, I had the full facial hair at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not shaving. So that was the closest I got to being in a movie. I want
that's, you. That's like, that reminds me of a story of Lou Lamorello. I think Lou told it on the air one night where Lou was offered a part in The Sopranos.
Wow.
And well, I mean, Lou cool. Lamorello in The Sopranos. And it kind of makes sense. The president, general manager of the Devils.
Sure.
But Lou's a bit of a, I don't know if you know Lou. Lou's a bit of a control freak. So they sent him the script, and Lou's scene was supposed to take place at Bada Bing.
Love it. For those who aren't aware, that's a script
with the,
took 15
with the peelers.
With the peelers. Lou took the script, put it back in the envelope, sent it back, and said, no, thank you.
Well, good for him. So much for that career.
Well, he's done okay without it. By the way, and how are you doing with all the things you're doing? You're doing Major League Baseball number, because I mean we all knew you from ESPN.
Sure.
You're doing DAZN. I see you on NHL Network every once in a while, not very often.
Yeah.
How are things?
Things are great, man. It's funny, you mentioned North Jersey, which is where we live. So we're about 35 minutes from New York City. But you mentioned the Bada Bing right here on Route 17. Not that I go, but it is 15 minutes from my house. So every time I drive by, I just picture Ralphie killing the stripper outside. I go, God, what a demented guy that guy was. All right, let me get to work. Out there in Secaucus, where you know MLB Network, NHL Network are. It's been great. The hockey guys have been great. First of all, Kevin Weeks, Dave Reed. I mean, all these guys. There's so many Canadians. We're doing a network, which is only available in America, which is so funny. We're doing Canada's game with Canadians for an American audience. Sure. So that's always fun. And MLB Network's been great. It's a lot of actually old ESPN people, producers and such, who are there now behind the scenes. We have a blast. And things have worked out great. I mean, I had a great time at ESPN. And now I'm really enjoying everything else I'm doing. DAZN is different with the streaming. They've got to get the boxing back. That's still a work in progress. Yeah. But the MLB and NHL stuff has been fun.
The only phrase that really interests me in that entire speech, Virk, is not that I go.
I'm an old man now, Bob. 42, all right? Okay, I'm well.
No one believes that crap. We know. Like, hell, I'd wander in if I drove by it every day.
I just want to see, honey, if it looks like the way it looked like in the show. That's all I'm doing here.
Exactly.
Verisimilitude.
Just walk in and, you know, do this every once in a while. You know,
fantastic.
Put the thing both out. Of you, just checking the shot angles here.
Both of you would go to Bada Bing for research. Unbelievable.
Exactly. Unbelievable. Exactly right, John.
That's exactly right. Verisimilitude here. That's all we're looking at here.
All right. We love seeing you and we love talking to you. And hopefully we'll do it again sometime when you've got a few minutes. And a week left in this baseball thing. Who do you like in the Stanley Cup final?
Well, I called the Lightning in six, and now I have a little bit of fear because every time I've kept underestimating the Stars. I said, oh, Vegas Lightning for sure. Bet the house on it. Oh, wait, Stars went in five. Oh, okay, well, they got that one round. They're not going to win the Stanley Cup. Oh, wait, Stars win game one. So don't listen to me, but I have Lightning in six. Hudobin's a tremendous story, by the way. Marty Turco, I was reading Marty Turco was saying, he goes, I love the fact he's a small guy like me, both of us 5'11". And I kept thinking about this, back to movies. If I told you Kazakhstan 14 years ago, you'd think of Borat. Now I mentioned Kazakhstan. I go, yeah, Anton Hudobin. This guy's 34 years old, and he's been the stud goalie for this Dallas Stars team. Remarkable story if they win, Bob.
Yeah. And it happens almost all the time in the postseason. Somebody jumps up that you least expect. And as often as not, it's a goaltender. Just the nature of the game, I think.
Oh, but how about this? We were talking yesterday about Joel Hanley scoring his first goal. You go back in some of these names, you and me and John would laugh. Greg Haugen in 88, Jim Pack with the Penguins in 91. Sure. Abdul Kader a couple of years ago. Every playoff, there's one guy go, who's this guy?
Exactly.
And he scores a big-time goal.
Exactly. It happens all the time. Yeah. We got to get out of here. You got things to do. We'll see you down the road. You're a good pal. We appreciate you coming on. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for any time, guys. Good to catch up.
I won't call you. I will text you.
Just text me. Don't call me.
Unbelievable.
Ed and Virk of MLB Network and DAZN, among other things. And we'll do a podcast again for you on Wednesday. See ya.